Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Two Norries podcast. I'm your host, James, and I'm joined as always by my good friend, Timmy Long.
Hello.
We're back up in Ballymun Access Theatre again with Sinead Crowther, the CEO and founder of Tansticks. That's a lovely name, isn't it?
Thank you, yeah.
They're like little jelly lollipops for, it's like an alternative to Strepsils for kids.
Exactly. It's a kids' kind of alternative, sort of a child-friendly throat soother for children, yeah.
Was that an idea that was in your head that has now manifested?
Yeah, well, I'm a pharmaceutical technician by trade, and I did that. I started that when I was in transition year in school, and that was a few years ago, 30 years ago. And even then, parents were coming in looking for something for their kids' sore throat. And back then, there was like these licorice sticks or glycerin sticks.
Yeah, they're actually like hard glass. You remember them, yeah.
Sugar. And they'd fly out, and then over the years, there was just syrups for kids, but they don't taste great all the time, and it's really messy. Yeah. And I used to joke with my friends and when in work saying, I have this idea for a kid's throat soother, I'm going to do it one day. And sure, never. I had no skills to do that, so I just thought that would never happen. You know, with that conversation around the table, this is a great idea.
Look, no, but do you know, will we bring it right back to the start and let's find out who Sinead is. So just give us a little bit of context where you grew up, family dynamics, and how it was for you in school or anything else, and we'll go from there.
Actually, yeah, I suppose to start is important, isn't it? So I am the youngest of six from Finglas, a working class family. My dad did the thing where he went to work, handed up the money. He had the drinks Thursday night, Sunday night. You never knew what form he was going to come home in. Some night you'd get, this is the way to Amarillo, serenaded, and another night you'd be in terrible form, you know, but that was quite typical of the 80s, wasn't it, at the time. My brothers and sisters all worked in jobs. I was the first to do my leave insert, and it was nearly like the notions of this one doing her leave insert. They were all real supportive, you know, but growing up in Northside Dublin, you know, I suppose my family, we show each other we love each other by slagging each other. So I suppose if someone said something nice, you'd be like, are they sick? Like, what? So an insult is how we greet each other, I suppose. So there's a big age gap. Like, my sister is 18 years older than me. She'll hate me saying that. I'm sorry.
We won't name her.
Sorry about that. So that was all fairly typical. And then I was the last one at home, of course, and they'd all married and gone off. In school, I was really, really painfully shy. I think when you're the youngest sibling, and this isn't anything negative about my family, or they're brilliant. When you're the youngest, a lot of times you get, what do you know? Shut up. You're five. What do you know? You know, that type of thing. And so you kind of grow up thinking, I'm not really that important, or no one values my opinion, you know. And in school, I was just clever, right? But I always played it down, because from Finglas, you were a swat or you were a nerd. And I had a tough time in secondary school with that, because I was so shy. And I had my two or three little friends who were similar. And Finglas is tough, do you know, and they're all hard nuts, and no one was there to go on to do master's degrees. They were there just because they had to be in school till they were 15, a lot of the people. So I found that hard in secondary school. So I just played the intelligence. And I never used to want to say I was intelligent. I thought that was arrogant. I played that under the radar the whole time, and took that into probably relationships I was in as well, maybe, where I didn't want to be outshining anyone. Do you know? So that's how it started. Yeah.
Where did a pharmacy technician work?
So I knew I wanted to do something medical. My mum had asthma right? I suppose how it started. And I used to be fascinated as a young child that she'd take her inhaler, right? And then she could breathe. And I'd be like, why did that do that to her? And I used to think, and then the paramedics would come, she got carried off in the ambulance a lot. And I'd be like this 10-year-old, because I was the only one in the house, saying to the paramedics, she's on like this tablet and she takes these two inhalers. For some reason, even at a young age, I was interested. So my transition year school teacher put me into this pharmacy for work experience. Mm. And I absolutely loved it. I think the lady who owned the pharmacy, it was in O'Devany Gardens, just off the North Circular Road. She'd been there like 40 years and she knew everyone in the community, like from the grandparents down to the grandkids. And they had such respect for her. And back then there was no Google. Mm. So anything I wanted to know, she'd say, see that big book over there? You look it up. And that just fueled my passion for learning in a real positive way. And I think that's probably why I liked it so much. Do you know, I loved the idea of someone would come in with a problem and she could help. And I felt I'd like to have that feeling of helping. So it just really suited me.
She was your guide.
Mentor, the first real mentor. And a woman in business a long time, like when she started her business, you gave up work when you got married. In the 50s, she started her business, because this was back in the early 90s now when I was 15. And she was really rare anyway. And she had a big picture of the Pope in the dispensary. And like she didn't dispense the pill or anything. It was against Catholic beliefs. And, you know, but she, in spite of that, she was a brilliant woman, you know. I don't mean in spite of that. She was a great person in the community. And I suppose...
She inspired you.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. She was great.
So you finished, you went down, completed your Lincoln
Circle. So I actually started a science degree. And it was in Tallaght. And here's the thing about coming from Finglas. Your school guidance counsellors don't really map out a lot of options for you. Like my friend got told she could get a job in Tesco. That'd be the level, you know what I mean, that you should aspire to. And so I suppose I was bright in some ways, and they must have noticed that and encouraged me to apply for college. And we did, a few friends did. But being from Finglas, all my family worked. So I would have had two jobs at 15. Mm-hmm. So I worked in a bar. And then I worked in the evenings and I worked in the pharmacy at weekends, because you just had to work if you needed money. Very different to now, where kids' parents provide everything. And so I had to get two buses in the morning to Tallaght, or TC it was called back then, and two buses home, and then do a shift in the bar, and I couldn't maintain it. And so that was the first time I felt like I was a failure, because I had to drop out. And I suppose that's another reason why, coming from an area like that, you don't have the same opportunity, or it's not as easy. I'm not saying it's impossible, because loads of people do well. But for me, and so then I was thinking,
Do you know what? You said something there about the dropping out and having the two jobs and doing the degree at the same time. Like, there's three people in there. You know, there's three people and you're trying to keep everything going. And I can relate to it. I had to lately just pack up a master's that I was doing, because we're doing the podcast. I have a full-time job. I have two young kids. I have so much going on. And I had to pull back. And sometimes something like that is just about really looking at your priorities and minding yourself.
Absolutely.
But you're 18, and so a lot of other people are doing it, you know. But they weren't maybe getting the two buses, or maybe they had more financial support. They didn't need two jobs, things like that. So that's when I realised, you know, I'm just going to take a year out and I'll try the pharmaceutical technician's course. That's probably more at my level. That's what I did.
Was that a further education college then?
Yeah, it was like a post-leave insert diploma level, I suppose level 5 or 6 now would be. And that the first year of that was in the post-leave insert school in Finglas called Cloisht Éire. And then the second year was 6 months in the pharmacy and 6 months in Trinity College. So I got to do 6 months in Trinity College. And as a young child, I used to always, when I was in town with my mum, dream about going through the arts. So it was...
So you went down to be a pharmacist then, Sinead?
Pharmaceutical technician now. Yeah. Like I said, pharmacist does the hard work.
We call her PT, so.
What's your role in the pharmacy in relation to the pharmacist?
So you do all the running around and they take all the credit. I know every pharmacist is going to hate I said that. No.
We just had one on before you.
So what you do is you take the prescriptions in, you dispense them, you can read, you have an understanding of what the drugs are for, how many times a day to take them, what they interact with, but you don't understand, I'm going to get all sciencey now, the pharmacology of it, as in what happens in the cells, in the body when you take the medicine. That's what the pharmacist knows. So you've this level here, but they have like...
a deeper knowledge.
Yeah. And it's a really important job that people underestimate the responsibility of it, you know? But I loved it because you're dispensing and then you're helping people at the counter. Sure. And then there's the cosmetic side where you get to try out all the lip glosses and all that. That's great for a girl, I suppose. And just the sense of community and the staff. I always just had a laugh with the staff, you know, so I just enjoyed it. I mean, I did it for 25 years.
Come out of.
Yeah, I dipped in and out of other things. Yeah. And this is the thing, I suppose, that would indicate I had entrepreneurial spirit is I was always still curious to try other things.
Yeah. So you went from, the college into the pharmacy.
Yeah.
It wasn't a linear path from college to pharmacy to CEO.
No.
You had your ups and downs along the way as well.
Many.
Do you want to talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, life was ticking along. Well, I got married. I had 3 children in 5 years. Did the property ladder thing where we bought 3 houses in like 3 years or something in the boom. And everything was going great. But I had also had a miscarriage. And so I had 4 pregnancies in 5 years. And I suppose that must have took a toll on me emotionally. And I would have been suffering from postnatal depression, but didn't realise. I suppose that impacted my marriage. And my marriage came to an end, you know. And then I found myself in the position I had these 3 kids and I was paying the mortgage, paying the car loan, and trying to find a way to get to work, juggle the childcare while having really bad anxiety and depression. So my children's fathers is very much in their lives and he'd take them in the evenings at weekends and then that's when I go to work. But in between that, being a lone parent is terribly isolating. Mm. And when you're a lone parent with 3 children, financial responsibilities and depression, like it's a bad mix. And I had that dangerous depression where no one outside the house knew because I'm the joker. I hate being in a room with someone without kind of, I try to bring this energy to make someone laugh because I know how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
And I don't want anyone else to be feeling like that. So in a shift in work with me, we'd be having a laugh, you know, and then I'd be in the car going home going, oh my God, am I going to make it in time for the sports? There's no one there to tag team in when you go home.
Yeah.
When you close the door, it's you. You have to get the sports, you have to get, and I'm not complaining about that. You know, I'm so lucky to have my children.
But with the kids, it's all about them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you're neglecting your own needs, and you're not being hard. And
yeah, well, the thing is, when you're a lone parent, you're in lockdown. Like people talked about being in lockdown in the pandemic. Lone parents are in lockdown once their children go to bed at night. You can't leave the house for hobby. Most lone parents I know can't afford to pay a babysitter to go out to do a class outside or go to aerobics. You can't afford the aerobics class. I know I wasn't making the ends meet. I fell into arrears with the mortgage. Then you had the bank ringing you twice a week. You're this much in arrears. To amount to pay off it, you're this much in arrears. At one point they said, you're going to have to just surrender the keys now. And I thought, over my dead body, am I surrendering the keys? Because back then, on the street I lived, there was one house that was rented out and families only lasted a year in it because the neighbours complained about the noise. And this was back in 2008-09. And I remember thinking, I have 3 boys who can be loud and they play football. Imagine renting a house and someone complains and then we're constantly moving around. And all I wanted for them was stability. So no matter what, my goal was keep the house, pay the mortgage. That was literally my goal every morning, make sure they're fed and they've, you know, everything they need for school.
Yeah.
That's it.
Did you ever have to go to court or anything over the house or the job was just about managers?
The courts, yes. I was in courts for different reasons. So I have to tell you, I had a second relationship. And when you're not happy or confident in yourself, you're not going to have a very fulfilling relationship because you might get into a relationship that's not good for you. Again, different personalities. That didn't work out, but I had a child with that person as well.
Yeah.
The more you, in your head, you're failing, the more you're seeking validation that you can have a loving relationship, you know. And so you might continue that cycle till you realise it's not working.
It's an inside job.
Yes.
And it doesn't matter who it is.
Yeah. And so if I didn't see my value, I'm not going to pick a partner who maybe necessarily valued me, you know. Other issues, but anyway, that's what that was at. And so I had a 4th child then. And my postnatal depression hit hard then because I had chosen to have another baby and I had started the cycle again. So I couldn't forgive myself for that.
Mm.
The dream baby. Mm. He slept through the night from an early age. But then I had two access plans to manage, yeah. another mouth to feed. The other lads were at an age where it was getting easier. And I just took all of the responsibility on this, on my shoulders again. Well, you chose this. And I did, ultimately, you know. And then you feel like you don't deserve the right to be helped because you chose it. You made your bed, lying it. You're an absolute dope. Like, what are you doing? But then you besotted with these children, you know.
Emotions.
Yeah. And so I had to go through courts a number of times. The courts I found traumatic. Legal aid. So you'd pay, you get a grant, it's means tested, and they give you so many things, visits to court with a barrister, but they don't get resolved. And I have to say, the court system is broken. There's no focus on actually what the children need. It's managing, I don't know, what the parents feel is best, but no one's actually looking at what is the best for the child. Yeah. And that really broke me. And the first couple of times you're like, well, when we go to court, this is all going to get sorted. And that's the access plan. And they're going to pay this much. And we'll just go on about our lives. But the plans aren't adhered to. And what devastated me was, you might go, say someone's late with access or pick up or drop off or whatever. And you'll go, I need help with this. They didn't come this weekend for access, so I couldn't go to work. I had to ring in to work, and now I'm down the pay, and I'm barely making ends meet as it is. Mm. They're not enforced. No one enforces them.
Yeah.
Gardaí don't enforce them because it's a family matter. I hate doing this, but...
Yeah.
And you're in the cycle.
What about with the bank and the mortgage and stuff? Did that ever go to court?
No. So I went into the mortgage arrears resolution process. And so you know how the banks help. So they increase the mortgage for the first 6 months.
Lovely.
Then they decrease it for 6 months and then they level it out at what you were paying. And then any arrears, they capitalise, I think it's called, and add it to just the balance.
Yeah.
So this is all going on while you're just trying to get your kids to school, while you're trying to be perky.
What kind of support did you receive when you were going through financial difficulties? Were you engaged with MABS or anybody like that?
I did engage with MABS, but basically they were just... you know, coming up with a plan to reach out to the places, but you still have to pay everything.
Yeah. It doesn't give you money in your bank.
It doesn't make your bank balance.
It can MABS can help if the finances are there.
Yeah.
But if they're not there,
yeah.
they can't help you, like, you know.
The thing about the courts is when you have legal aid, you're dealing with a barrister in their office, but on the day of the hearing, let's say for access, and you're not used to that environment, a barrister rocks up that you've never met before.
Yeah.
At 10 to 9, and they'll say, right, real quick, in the next 10 minutes, give me your whole history, what's going on.
Yeah.
And then they go into the courtroom to represent you, and you're not allowed to speak. And it's a joke, and then it's not going to get resolved because they don't even know your history, right? And then you have to go away and come back. The other thing is, if anyone was late, and this hasn't happened to me, but friends now who were separated in this situation, if their partners didn't pay their access or the maintenance, they have to miss it for 2 months. Right, so you then, or this person then, has to go without that money, which is essential, for 2 months before they can take that person back to court. Then you could be waiting 4 months to court, so that's 6 months they haven't paid, right? They could be in arrears of €1,000 at that stage. And then when you get back into the court, the judge says, well, look, he'll just pay you the arrears of £5 a week. Mm. That's literally taking the food out of the children's mouth, and you're just told all the time, sure, look, you'll have to manage. You're figuring this out anyway.
So with all that pressure...
All the pressure.
And the depression, what was your darkest moment? Like, can you remember, like, how low it got?
Yeah, so, like, that's a lot of external pressures. Like, getting, first of all, what your children need. One of my children had asthma, so he was up every night coughing and he didn't sleep. Your anxiety. I used to love bedtime, right? The kids would be going to bed, but then I dread it because my anxiety kicked in. I'm not enough. Am I going to have enough money to pay their school tour? And then I felt like I had to have them pristine or else people would think I wasn't a good mom. Yeah. So I'd be ironing all their clothes and making sure the house was spotless. It's like my mom years ago, like in Finglas, she'd say, that one's living on her nerves, you know. But it was really, I suppose that was people with anxiety. Yeah. And then it was just constantly checking the bank account. Is there enough this week? Or I pay everything out and you have literally £60 for food, you know. And I was too ashamed to tell anyone. Mm. Like I'm saying, this depression, outside the house, no one knew. My kids had food in their lunchbox. We had sausages and mash for dinner. We had the basics, but what was failing, what there wasn't enough was money to pay the mortgage. Or I had a credit union loan for a banger of a car, but I needed the car to get to work. And I just felt like my kids deserved a better mom who could give them more.
Yeah.
And I wasn't it. And I like the love you have is consume and you just want the best for them. But at the same time, you're saying, but you're doing a shit job. Mm. But you're not doing a shit job. That's depression telling you. They're in their house. They got bedtime stories. Don't get me
wrong. As best as you can. Like.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I obviously was ratty. I was tired. I was under pressure. There was external pressures from other kind of drivers coming in.
Yeah.
And all the while they were tucked into bed, I probably was shouting. I probably was grumpy, you know, and then you're beating yourself up. I snapped at them today. They're only small and I'm after snapping. So it's another reason why they deserve better. So this all came to a head where I just thought, I can't, like, the house was getting, the bank wanted it back. I wasn't making the shifts in work because one of them was always sick and then you don't have enough money. And I just said, you know what? And here's the scary thing, right? It becomes crystal clear when you're depressed what you need to do to remove yourself. I've never really talked about this before, in that it's as clear as like that mic's in front of you. You just need to be gone. And here's the benefits to the world when you're gone out of it. You're caught. Like, my mom was worried about me. I didn't want to keep dragging her into it. So she's reaching a certain age. She shouldn't be worrying about me. I'm an adult. I wasn't providing enough for my kids. I couldn't pay the bills. I was letting my boss down because I couldn't show up for work if they were sick. Mm. My friends were probably getting bored listening to it. So I stopped talking to them about it. Then you stop going out because you can't afford to go out. So you're even more isolated. People never say, I actually would love this to be shared. If you have a friend who's a lone parent, they can't make it out. They're either going to say they've no babysitter or whatever. They can't afford it. Yeah. They can't afford to go out with you for that brunch. Come to them. Like, show up at their house with a load of muffins and some coffees. Yeah. You know, take that and make them feel part of it. Because I'd be like, of course, I have no baby. I'd love to go. And then I'm sitting there going, I don't even fit in there anymore. There's no place for me anywhere. And so I remember it came to a point where I'd had a bad day. I think I shouted at the kids and I said, there's not enough now for the mortgage. And if I am gone, this mortgage will be paid as part of my life insurance. And their dad wouldn't have to worry about that part. And he could just, you know, now I, not a lot of conversations other than access on the personal front. And I sat down at the table to write the letters because I was determined that they wouldn't go thinking I didn't love them.
Suicide letter.
Yeah. So the plan, I won't be going into what it was, or unless you want me to. I don't want it to be a how to do this.
But no. It's, you can talk about
it. Yeah, okay. So the plan
can help anybody.
So this is for real. I've never said this before. So the plan was, I was going to, the fumes of the exhaust in the car on the beach, because I didn't want to be found and didn't want my children to have to live in the house where their mammy was found, because all I was thinking about was them. I was writing the letter to tell them that I wasn't doing this because I didn't love them. I was doing it because I loved them, that they deserved better, and that when I was gone, all their problems would be gone, you know. And then I realised, so I was writing the letter and I couldn't see because I started crying, and I had pictures set out to for them to have of me with them, right? And I couldn't see the page because I was crying so much. And I said to myself, I'm not, so it was the next day, like, I said, I'm not gonna leave without them knowing. Like, this is so important to me that they know. And then I went to bed, I cried myself to sleep. And then the guy who's always sick woke up coughing, and I went and I took his hand, and then daylight came. And I said, what am I actually doing? Like, it's better that they have a bad mom than no mom, because I was labelling myself a bad mom than no mom at all. Like,
and just stop you there.
Yeah.
That is actually how you do feel and think when you're completely depressed.
You're, it's a clinical.
Yes.
It's an illness. It's not, so, you know.
There's no hope. Like,
there's no hope. The world is actually worse with me in it, because I'm just causing all these problems. Do you know what I mean? But depression's lying. That actually isn't the case, but you're not telling people about these darkest feelings. You're just saying, oh, sure, look, I snapped at the kids, and people say, sure, everyone lied, did that today. But they don't know you're ruminating on that.
Yeah.
And it's all you can think about, you know, and trying to be put on this front so your kids don't pick it up. But I'm sure they did. You know, I haven't talked to my own children about this in great detail. So, you know, they know I suffered from depression at times. So that's the scary part. And if I had been able to write those letters, I would have 100% gone to the beach the next day.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I was doing it for them. But then, do you know what I thought? struck me the next day. I was thinking, I want to be... So when you suffer from depression, you think you're selfish. Everything you do for yourself is selfish. Like, you've no right to time down, or you've no right to time to yourself, or to buy out from yourself, because that's taken... Like, it's really bad illness that people do. And the other thing about depression is you can be happy while you're depressed. Mm. Like, I'd go into work and have the crack with my colleagues. Mm. I'm the biggest joker. I love having fun.
Do you ever feel like a phony then, though?
No, because I'm
laughing like that.
I seek it out. Because I really felt like I was...
You had to put that mask on while you're in work.
Yeah.
But then that mask is masking the emotional stuff then underneath as well.
Yeah.
And for me...
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
If I'm bad and I have to be in a social context and I have to be a certain way, and I'm feeling in here different to the way I'm looking over here, I feel like a phony. I feel not that I'm there to impress or hurt, do anything for anybody. It's just, for me, I feel like I'm not being myself because I feel fucking miserable inside. You know, I haven't felt like that in a long time.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
That's when you get well. Yeah. I feel slightly different. For me, it's that I am enjoying it in that moment, and I wish I could take it home with me. It's a distraction from my thoughts. And so I loved the shifts in work. But the next day when daylight came and I got my kids up and you're giving them hugs and they're calling you mammy and their little hands. And I used to love, it's like they're young men there, but I used to love smelling their hands. Like they smell like Liga or biscuits. And, you know, just all those gorgeous things you don't realise it goes so fast.
You had four kids this day.
Yeah. I remember thinking, I'm doing this to end my pain, but really it's going to cost them so much.
Mm.
And in the end, that's why I didn't. So anyway, things escalated financially.
How did you deal with the aftermath?
So I kind of just, that thought kept me from doing it. Yeah. That by you taking this action, Sinead, you're going to end yours, but you're going to impose a whole wealth of pain on them. And it doesn't matter what you write in a letter. They'll never understand that it was because you loved them. They'll think it's because they weren't enough. And I grew up thinking I am not enough, and I didn't want to inflict that on them. So I just thought it's going to continue feeling like life isn't really for me to enjoy. It's just to be their mom now.
Yeah.
And that's honestly what got me up every day. But I didn't magically feel joy. So it escalated, things escalated financially, and I was missing more and more work. And then my little guy, I was having trouble finding the youngest guy babysitters on a Sunday because my shifts and work required me to do Sundays, and it was coming up to Christmas. And the other thing about being separated is the courts will say, you know, the other non-resident parent will have to pay half Christmas, half of school costs and that. But the other annoying thing about the system is the parent who's resident has to pay it all up front. So a school costs €1,000.
And then you've look for it afterwards.
And then look for afterwards with receipts. And they might only pay 10, 15 euro, 25 quid a week till that part is clear. But you have to find it.
Yeah.
All this and then it's, your kids come home with letters from invites to birthday parties. That's 10 or go. Just four of them. School. Yeah. So Christmas was coming and the lists were in. And I'd missed a lot of work and I'd had disciplinary hearings about, you know, you're not fulfilling your contract. we might have to let you go. And I was like, then I have no hope, and, you know, despair, anxiety, selfie.
And it wasn't like you were at home getting fucking drunk.
No.
Or stoned. You were minding four kids. And
20 hours a week and work because I couldn't afford a minder full time. And I actually didn't want to leave them full time. So lone parents and fists and all that jazz, and you're at the calculator every week. And so I had borrowed €600 from a moneylender. And I was like, right, that'll be my half of Christmas. And then I just need to get food and whatever. And I went to work on this particular Sunday and I just had a bad feeling. I had a really bad feeling going that day. I don't know what it was. And I just was like, anyway, shake it off. This is anxiety talking. It's not real. Go off and go to work. And I had a great day in work. It was Christmas jumper day. We were having a laugh. And I was like, oh, Jesus, you have to push through this anxiety. It was just an idea in your head. It doesn't make it real. And then I got a phone call at 4 o'clock and there was just screaming in the background. And the babysitter had said, there's an accident, come home, you know. So my little boy, who was two, had pulled the boiling potatoes over himself. And he was so small. And it was his leg and foot. And when I ran in, he kind of stopped breathing in my arms and stuff. And I was going to go in a taxi. And then I just rang the ambulance and they stayed on. It's the shock of a severe burn. Your body can just shut down. Yeah. And so I was having an out-of-body surreal experience where my baby's in my arm. I'm on the phone to the paramedics and they're telling me to sing Peppa Pig or something me new. Probably going to get emotional. I always
get
out. And I was like, this is all your fault. You've done this to him, you know. Anyway, we went into hospital and he developed sepsis 24 hours later. And then for 10 days, he needed skin grafts. He tore a degree burns. The babysitter was traumatised. The paramedic had to go in there. And Christmas was coming. My mum moved into the house and was helping with school. My neighbours were helping school. Their dad was helping school. And I was trying to get Christmas online on the hospital ward. I was trying to tell the boys he wasn't that sick because I didn't want them to worry. And then after 10 days, the sepsis just wasn't going. He was all red and they were giving him morphine. He was only 2.5. And the whole time in the hospital, I was just saying, if you had it topped yourself, this wouldn't have happened, do you know? And it's all your fault. Mm. And in the meantime, mam mode is kicking in for the other three. And I'm ringing them and going, no, he's doing okay. And you can't leave a child when they're in hospital on a ward. So I couldn't go to the toilet or go to a shower. My friends and stuff were coming up to visit. They were bringing me food. And the night before my 40th birthday, it's so dramatic. Like, the doctors came in and said, look, there's no more antibiotics like we can give for the sepsis, you know. And I hadn't been in touch with his dad.
Sepsis is poison in the blood.
Yeah, so it's an so due to the burn, his immune system took a hit.
Mm.
And so you might get an infection, but sepsis consumes your bloodstream. It's not, you know, you have a chest infection, it's your lung, or you have tonsillitis, it's your throat. It's in your blood. And antibiotics weren't working, and it was 10 days. And he couldn't get his skin grafts because he had sepsis. You can't operate with an infection. And we had to keep changing his dressings. And it was the most horrific thing. So I said, right, I'm going to have to let his dad know now, because if something happens, I have to do the right thing.
Yeah.
I have to give him the opportunity to come up. And I just thought I'd create a whole load of shit for myself by telling them how he was in the hospital, and it wasn't right. I should have told him the first day, but we were on speaking terms on and off, and this was a kind of an off speaking terms thing. So anyway, he came up immediately, and John was transferred then to Crumlin. And so, sorry, the next morning I turned 40, but that night when the doctors came in and said we can't do any more on the sepsis front, I kind of took his little hand and I said, please get better. And like, I'll really try hard to change our circumstances, and I promise we'll never be in this situation again. And just don't give up, you know. And his temperature was 40 that night, and it was just nothing anyone was able to do. And then I dozed off, and then the next morning he was kind of, it's only a baby, sitting up and chatting. He wasn't really chatting because he's on morphine a lot. And then he pointed to his bowl and asked for Krispies, Rice Krispies, right? And he hadn't eaten. He hadn't eaten in 10 days. And I was like, you want Rice Krispies? We get you all the Rice Krispies. And it was my birthday.
Yeah.
And in Crumlin, they have all activities for Christmas and they'd like carol singers. And I was like, it's a miracle. Like, it's the best miracle ever.
Was a miracle.
Yeah. And he had a skin grafts. And we made it home for Christmas. And I was working in Tesco Pharmacy at the time. And all my colleagues sent home in the delivery van, like, crates of food. I'm really going to get emotional now. When people are kind to you.
You get them.
You know, you're used to hiding things and battling on your own. It's completely overwhelming. A big feckin' turkey came up. My friends and, you know, everyone had pulled around, family, the dads, and organised Christmas and that. And Santa came. And I was like, we're never going back. And my GP had over the years had tried to get me on antidepressants and anti-anxiety meds. And being the pharmaceutical technician, I was like, no, but I don't have depression. I'm just a waste of space.
Yeah.
Even though I'm in that sector. And I would tell everyone else.
Because we can talk to ourselves in a way we would never speak to another person like that.
And you don't realise. And the thing is, you know, like the builder whose own house is an absolute shit.
Yeah.
And everyone else is, you know, is tip top. It was kind of a bit of that. So
you made a promise, didn't you?
I made a promise. And I went to counselling then through Drogheda, Women's Refuge. They are great to support women in general, whether you're, you know, whatever your circumstances. And I just met the best counsellor because I tried over the years and the counsellor wasn't right for me. And I'd say that's really important.
Absolutely. It's all about the relationship.
I didn't know that because I went to a counsellor before and this was the session kind of tentatively trying to say, I feel like this. And they were the classic thing you see on the telly. And why? Like, I don't know. Like, that's why I'm here. Yeah.
You have to laugh, though. It's such stereotype, like, it's such sword of the book, like.
I didn't know that. If I put, when I go to this counsellor now, they're going to solve my problems. And it was just like, that was absolutely pointless. So this other counsellor, she was brilliant from the time I met her. First of all, she just heard me. She just let me talk. And then she said, you know, you're doing the best you can. And she would give me scenarios like, and frame things in a way I never thought of before. So I'll give you an example. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. I thought it was hideous, right? Like, I'm no J-Lo, right? But I'm not the worst either, right? But at the time, I couldn't look in the mirror at myself. I just was repulsed. And that was part of my self-esteem and whatever. And she was saying, if you had a best friend and you were going out on a night out and you were getting ready and you put your gear on and you're standing in front of the mirror and your best friend was saying, that dress is desperate on you, the state of your hair, are you really going out like that? You're horrendous. Would you hang out with her? And I was like, Jesus, no, why? And she goes, well, that's who you carry in here every day, all day.
That critical mind, yeah, that voice.
Like, I didn't look at her like that before.
Yeah, because that's what we were saying, like, we speak to ourselves in a way, if somebody else speaks to us like that, we give them a slap.
But you wouldn't be around it. She's like, so you are actually doing this yourself, and that in combination with the antidepressants, right, just changed everything. I started to understand that I was not well. You know, I wasn't thinking these things. It's a chemical imbalance in your brain, depression, that you can't fix yourself. And you need, you know, for me, it was the combination of counselling and the medication. And then I need...
That's important as well, the medication side of it. Works.
And it
does work
for everyone. And I mean, as a pharmaceutical technician, I can dish out the advice where it takes a while to get the dose right, but just don't give up. Like, nothing that's worthwhile comes easy or it doesn't be solved in a day. And you get side effects, like the side effects where I had a really dry mouth or I was starving all the time. But for me, and people hate this, right, when I get stressed, I lose weight and other people comfort eat and they put on weight. But I was at the point where my head looked too big for my body. I was so thin. But that wasn't deliberate. I physically couldn't stomach food from stress and I'd feel sick after a mouthful. But there you are, making sure your kids have their lunch box filled and everything. So the combination really worked for me. And then I was saying, I need to have a job. So I never went back to work that day. I didn't tell you that. That was the last. I didn't know that was my last day in that job. I never went back. And when the little guy got out of hospital, I said, I went on full-time lone parents. I was terrified if I left them something other than when they were with their dads, that something would happen to them.
Yeah.
The phone now is still, the phone is always, I'm looking at it to see, is there a call or is there anything? Yeah. Like, and this is 7 years now.
They're traumatised from it, like.
Yeah. And I'd be thinking, it's the one time you wouldn't have your phone on, something would happen. I never went back to the job. And then New Year's Day 2017, I woke up, I wasn't sleeping. And I woke up at 5 and I'd like the load in the washing machine, the dishwasher was on. I had the thing out going, what am I paying my bills with? Like, because we got out on the 23rd of December out of hospital and I hadn't gone back to work and Tesco had had a whip around. They gave me cash in an envelope and I was like, that's 2 weeks. Wait, like these are normal people. Yeah. Like no money to spare. And they did that for me. And it was like, I must matter.
Yeah.
That they did this. All these acts of kindness, you just don't know what they're going to do for another person.
Do you know what? Do you know when people see somebody really in need, or I don't know, is it an Irish thing or is it just, is it a humanistic thing? When people see a genuine person that's in need, like they'll go to that extra length. And yeah. That's when I see the real love and the humanity coming out in people, when they can see themselves in somebody else where they're really stuck, you know. And it's that story there really shows us that. No, we live in a world where there's a lot of madness going on, wars and people being killed for nothing, yeah. Okay? But if we focus on that negativity and that bad stuff, we'll start thinking everything is bad and everybody is. But when you hear these stories of the kindness of the staff of the Tesco,
yeah.
Like, that changes your perception. And we need to hear more of that stuff, particularly, you know, but we don't hear it.
Nope.
And that's why we need to hear it, because that gives people hope in humanity, and it allows us to know that, do you know what, it's not all for nothing.
Yeah.
You know?
That little, like everyone puts the money in, and it made my Christmas and my kids' Christmas. So yeah.
When did you get the ball rolling on the idea?
I woke up that New Year's Day, and while I was in the hospital, you know, you have to give your children medicines in a syringe, and sometimes you and the nurses are pinning them down. You're trying to fire it in.
Yeah.
It's very distressing. And I remember thinking, Jesus, my idea, because it's very unique in that it's jelly. So it's to soothe the throat, the jelly on the stick and remove the choke hazard. But I was thinking, well, if you could get a lozenge, you could essentially add medicines to it, and you're taking the distress away. Yeah. From giving this, administering these meds to kids. And I saw it so much on the wards, like your child is already sick, you're stressed, the nurse is stressed, and you have to, it feels wrong, like it feels like you're harming them.
Yeah.
You have to get these meds
in. Force feed.
So it was kind of reinforced during that kind of, we were nearly a month in the hospital. And when I came out New Year's Day, I was thinking, would I find out how I could make this? So I thought it was really simple. Anyone who's never started a business or invented a product thinks that's so easy.
Yeah.
So I sat down there and I Googled, how do you make a product from scratch? That was the Google search. Remember it clear as day. And a link to this website called Enterprise Ireland came up, and I had no clue what that was. And it said, do you have an idea or a concept you'd like to explore? Fill in this form. So back to being in school and being clever, I have no issue with English.
Yeah.
I'm lucky like that. And I suppose that's what helped me. I filled in the form. I have an idea, throat soother for a young child, for sore throats and coughs, natural honey, all the benefits, going to add zinc and vitamin C for immune support. Completely knew what we should be. Child friendly, I'm a mother, I'm also a pharmacy technician. I know both sides of the counter for the problem. I'd sell it in a pack of whatever and I hit send and I forgot about it. And then this was New Year's Day. And then the first working day in January, say the following Monday, I got a call from New Frontiers, the program called New Frontiers. And they said, we saw your application. We think there's something in that. Like, you should come in and talk to us. And I was like, you think that's good? Like, you think I came up with something good and useful? And they're like, God, it's really interesting. Like, I think you're really on to something, because we looked at this and there's nothing really in the market. And I'm like, no, I know there's not. But and I went in and met them and they put me on the program. And then I did not know I would like anything to do with business, and I absolutely soaked it up like a sponge. So in my leaving cert, I studied really, really, really hard for science, because I love science, right? I got a D on higher level. I got a B1 business studies higher level, didn't open a book. So there's just obviously something.
There's a natural flair for it, yeah.
That I wouldn't have even, I hate business, I hate the teacher in business studies. I just used to take on into the class.
Yeah.
So it's that's like that thing about school as well, and having good teachers who care about the subjects we're teaching. So went on the thing, soaked it all up, felt really stupid. I'll tell you why I felt stupid again. The imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
I was sitting with people who had corporate backgrounds, and they're like, I identify this need for this app around, you know, financial management or marketing. And these are all terms I didn't know. And you used to do like introduce yourself going around the room. And I was like, oh God, don't be my turn. Like, don't forget, I was still on the meds and I was getting the counsel, but I wasn't super confident. And I was like, oh, don't come to me, because I knew what I was going to say. So one guy was working with like the University of California developing an app for brain damaged people to communicate by blinking. And it was real high tech, right? And they were like, stand up, what's your idea? And I was like, I'm Sinead. I want to put jelly on a stick. Felt so stupid. Like, I felt really stupid. And you know what?
Yeah.
Out of that room, I'm the only one who's succeeded.
100%.
What year was that?
2017.
And it's 2023 now, May.
Yep.
Bring us up to speed and where you are now.
Up to speed now. So the product I always thought would be a good idea is now in 1,400 pharmacies in Ireland. Tonsticks, honey jelly pops for sore throats and dry coughs. Let's get the plug in.
Yeah.
Suitable for children too and up. 1,400 pharmacies we got listings in. On the island of Ireland, Northern Ireland. We ship some to Cyprus, strangely enough. And we've just secured, I suppose, a really significant contract with a big retailer in the UK, which I can't really discuss right now. Got a business partner in. I met her, another mam, on New Frontiers, and we kept in touch. And she decided she would join me. I knew I needed a partner to help me. She's engineer, marketing.
Yeah.
I was just starting a business, clear idea on where the product. So I knew you should have it in pharmacies, because that's where parents go when their child is sick. You know, when your child is sick, but not sick enough to take to the doctor.
Yeah.
But you know something's brewing, and you want that advice. Yeah. So I knew the product should sit there. I know everything about that pharmacy. I know everything that the mother's feeling. And then Denise was an engineer by trade, and she'd run a business. So I thought those would be two. You need to get people, who are better than you in other areas.
Yeah.
And we just got on well. We laugh together. So that's important for me. And I like being around her.
That's important as well in business, is if you're not strong on one thing and you know somebody else is.
Yeah.
Might be a good idea to bring him in. No, it depends on whether you get on, or you will get on as well. But like, if you think that they'll grow your business, you bring him in. You know,
there's no ego around that. You have to know what your strength is and what you're not so good at.
Of course, and you have to look at your time as well.
Yeah.
Have you got time to give a full amount of time to give to a new business? Because that'll take all your time.
So this is the other thing. When I was on New Frontiers, I had no money still. Because now I'm on loan parents full time. And I just had to keep applying for grants. But every grant, and it takes a long time to get grants through, and the forms could be 30 pages.
I know.
And that's very off-putting. But my motivation was, if I get that grant through, I get to stay home with these a bit longer. And that was my motivation. And don't forget, I was getting well. Month on month, I was getting well.
Yeah.
And those thoughts literally one day just switched off. And through this work that I didn't even know I was good at, I started to like enjoy it. I couldn't wait for the alarm clock to get up.
Yeah.
Where before I was like, oh Christ, what am I going to do today? How am I going to pay for this? How am I going to get this sorted? To, oh my God, I can't wait. Get them off to school, hit the ground running. I'm going to talk to this person today. And like, I really want people to know in this situation that it's a period of time, but it will pass.
Yeah.
You know, and if you are in that space, like, for God's sake, don't take that action. It's irreversible, you know. And I'm so glad I cried so hard that night I couldn't see, because I wouldn't be here with you today. My product wouldn't be in all these stores. Janet, myself and my business partner secured 1.3 million in funding to build a factory to make this product. My house was getting repossessed 6 years ago, right? And it's just that thing of, when that happened to my son, I bore the whole brunt of that myself. I couldn't forgive myself. The first thing I had to do with my counsellor was forgive myself. It wasn't just me who took me to this place. Events happened. And I did the best I could, not pat myself on the back, you know. But getting through each day is all you have to do.
Yeah.
You don't have to think of next Christmas. You have to think of this week.
You said it there yourself, like, this too shall pass. And suicide is a long-term solution to a short-term problem. It's a good saying as well. Well, like, it's great. Like, your story is amazing and it'll very inspiring for single mothers in Ireland and beyond.
Yeah.
To know that you can get through that, this difficult times and better days lie ahead.
Yeah.
And you're enjoying the fruits of your labour now, and I hope you remember us when you're a millionaire.
I hope when I'm a millionaire.
And just before... Just before we do finish up, you know, when anybody starts a new business, there's a lot of new stuff coming down the road, change, but there's also a lot of fear.
Fear.
You know, like, fear is something that will stop anybody in their tracks in forming a business or whatever, while it's going on to education or whatever. So it's important as well. What would you give, in one sentence, what would you give somebody to inspire them starting their own business that may be feeling that bit of fear as well?
Well, for me, I felt that I wasn't enough ever. I didn't have skills. The one sentence I would say is, you can literally learn anything. Ireland, we are so lucky. I know we give out about a lot of it. The supports are there if you want to take them. And more than one sentence. Being on your own, you can be angry and bitter about your situation till the cows come home.
Yes.
But you absolutely have the power to change it. So the big thing you have to do is, first of all, accept the situation, right? Okay, maybe the other person isn't paying enough, okay? You can be angry about that and take back and forth to court to get more, or you can go, right, that's what he's paying, what do I need to do now to bring in the rest of the money?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's your frame of mind and how you're going to approach it is what ultimately is going to get you through it. And this separation lone parent is this tiny part, but you've all this other stuff over there here you can take.
Yeah.
If you choose to, just get a support. Go on a course. There's nothing but courses, free of charge, when your kids are in school. You don't have to think, I have to work 40 hours a week. You just have to say, can I spare 2 hours twice a week to do this course? To see, do I like it? Yeah. Just start.
Yeah, just start. Yeah. Exactly. Build momentum. You never know where it'll go.
Yep.
Pleasure talking to you.
Thanks
so much. Thank you. So good. Love to meet you.
And we look forward to seeing how you progress over the years and stay in touch.
And the best of luck.
Thank you.
God bless. God bless. That contract is in the post anyway, on the way.
Yes.
To be signed. So, so thanks, Mel.
Thanks.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.